Well, we've come to verse 13 of Proverbs 13. And it goes like this. The one who despises the word will be in debt to it. That's the New American Standard Version. But the one who fears the commandment will be rewarded. The New English Translation reads, the one who despises instruction, the word often meaning instruction, will pay the penalty. But whoever esteems instruction will be rewarded. Or the New International Version, whoever scorns instruction will pay for it. Yeah, think about that. Somebody instructs you. You say, I don't care. Don't tell me anything about it. I don't want to hear about it. Don't tell me how to do it. Don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me whether it's dangerous. You'll pay for it. But whoever respects a command is rewarded. He respects instruction. He respects and he esteems learning something about it. Esteems it. The phrase in the Hebrew is, he will be broken for it. He will be broken for it. Or they bring destruction on themselves, says the New Revised Standard Version. The Hebrew says, he will be pledged to it. Whoever despises the word will be pledged to it, will be stuck to it. In other words, he will receive a penalty for it. So whoever despises it will be pledged to pay the penalty for his despising instruction. Whoever despises teaching will be treated as a debtor, says some. He will pay for it. He who offends against the law will pay for it. So if you fear the commandment, if you respect, the other one says, if you fear the commandment, if you respect instruction, you will be rewarded, you will be benefited. And that's true, isn't it? In life, people don't pay attention. They don't want to learn it. They don't want to know anything about it. I don't want to hear you. Don't tell me anything. And what happens? They get in lots of trouble. We can learn from the ancients. We can learn from people who have had more experience, and we should. Proverbs 13 now in verse 14. The teaching of the wise, of a wise man, is a fountain of life. Or as the New English Translation says it, it says it's like a life-giving fountain. It's not actually the fountain, it's a metaphor. It's like a fountain of life. Why? And the second part of that verse says, enabling, helping that person to avoid the deadly snares, the deadly traps. That's how it's a fountain of life. The teaching of the wise. Now, if you go in the first parts of Proverbs, you know, what's the whole book of Proverbs about? To give you wisdom, to help you to avoid the snares of life, you see, to know wisdom, instruction, to discern the understanding. This is Proverbs 1, verse 2. To receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, judgment, and equity. To give prudence to the naive and to the youth knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase in learning, and so on. The whole first chapter of Proverbs tells you why all these Proverbs are here. And so in verse 14 of chapter 13, he says what? Instruction from the wise is like a life-giving fountain because it turns you away from death, from the deadly traps of life. And the more understanding, wisdom, learning that you have, that you see, you can forecast. If I go down this road, you know, a lot of people can't forecast that. If I go down this road, this could happen, that could happen, the other thing could happen. They can't project out a behavior today, how it's going to end up tomorrow or in the future. So this is what the idea. And it says the law. And the King James says the law of the wise is a fountain of life. The actual word is the word Torah in verse 14. But in the book of Proverbs, the word Torah doesn't mean a command so much or a law. It means an instruction. It means a direction. It means a teaching. So the word Torah is kind of the instruction. So the Torah of the wise, the instruction of the wise, becomes like a fountain of life. So it's a metaphor. It means that the teaching of the wise is life-giving. The second part tells you why it's life-giving, because it helps you avoid the traps of death. So in that proverb, you see why it's life-giving. It helps you avoid the traps of death. The teaching of the wise. That's verse 14. Chapter 13 and verse 15. New American Standard Version reads it like this: good understanding produces favor, but the way of the treacherous is hard. Let me read that in the New English Translation. Keen insight wins favor, but the conduct of the unfaithful is harsh. The New International Version translates verse 15 like this: good judgment wins favor, but the way of the unfaithful leads to destruction. Now think about that. If you're around somebody and this person can give you insight, keen insight, good understanding. You're talking to this person and they say, well, you know, if you did it this way, this would, and this person give you this suggestion, and you say, well, yeah, you know, that's really good. I never thought of that. And somebody gives you that suggestion, you say, boy, that's really good. This person has good insight, keen insight, ability. You know, he's giving you ideas that you readily receive and see them as very valuable. He wins favor. And a person of good understanding and keen insight will win favor with people, even so much as to get promoted up and up further and further, whether it's a corporation or in a government. People who have keen insight, ideas that are really good, they move up the ladder. People see that. Oh, yeah, I like that. I like that person. I like that insight. I like their ideas. But the conduct of unfaithful, that is treacherous people, people who are unfaithful to the scriptures and leads to destruction. They don't stay with it. They don't care about insight. It leads to destruction. So it's very close to the verse 14 where you have that it's a fountain of life. The way of the wise is a fountain of life. Chapter 13 and verse 16. Every prudent man acts with knowledge. If you're a prudent man, you're going to act with what? Information, knowledge. But a fool displays folly. Here it is in the New English Translation. Every shrewd person acts with knowledge, but a fool displays. It means he just opens wide his folly. Here it is. Here's my folly. Here's my foolishness. The New International Version says, all who are prudent act with knowledge, but fools expose their folly. Eventually, if you're foolish, you will expose it. It'll just be very plain how foolish a person is. If they talk enough, you'll hear how foolish they are, how silly they are, how unwise they are. You'll just hear it. So the shrewd person knows the circumstances. He knows the dangers and the pitfalls. So he deals wisely with them. This makes him cautious. If you're shrewd, if you're prudent, what's prudent mean? It means you're careful. You're careful with what you do. You say, okay, I don't just plunge into things the first thing I do. I'm careful. I get the facts. I want knowledge. Somebody say, oh, how about investing in this? You say, well, okay, will it make me a lot of money? Oh, yeah, okay, here's my money. You don't do that. You got to say, well, what does that mean? What is it? Where does it go? How does it make me money? Well, what are the circumstances under which it wouldn't make me money? How does it go this way? Well, you're prudent. You go get the facts. You go get the knowledge. You find out. You don't just throw things. You don't just plunge headlong into a commitment of things that are not right. Good judgment. Okay, so every prudent man, rather, every shrewd person, it says in the New English Translation, shrewd, you're prudent. acts with knowledge. Get the facts. So, if given a chance, a fool will reveal his foolishness. But the wise, what do the wise people do? They study the facts. They get as much information on a subject as they possibly can before they make a decision. I often tell clients, you know, I wish you'd come to see me before you did this. Then you come to see me after you did it. You did it. Now you come to tell me that, well, everything's working out wrong. It's bad. I got myself in trouble. Why didn't you call before you did it? This is called impulsivity. There are a lot of people who are impulsive. They do it quickly. They do it immediately. They just make the decision and they decide it. And I'm going to do it. Now, there are people that do it. They're headstrong. And then some people, you know, there used to be a test that was given to husbands and wives to see, how they communicate. And it would be done like this. It was just a set of questions that people could answer. And they would give the copy to the wife. You go ahead and answer these questions. And give a copy to the husband. You go ahead and answer the questions. Okay. Now, turn in your copies. Okay. Now, here's another fresh copy. Put your heads together and answer the question. Combine yourselves and see how well you do on the test when the two of you are answering the same questions. Two heads are better than one, they say. That's true, only if there is good communication pattern between the two. Okay? What happens in people who have a very poor communication or are extremely competitive or have to have their own way is that they get that one test and they're test that they combine themselves together is lower in the score than either one of their answering by themselves. And what does this tell the researchers? It tells you that there's a competition, that they can't decide who really is right, that they don't believe the other when they say, I'm really positive that this is the answer. This is the way I answered. No, I'm really positive. This is true. No, I think I'm right. I'm right. I want you to put that in there. They will talk each other out of the right answers into the wrong answers. So the test that they did in combination is worse than the test they did individually. That's poor communication. That's poor communication. They don't know how to really say, are you really sure that, good communication would say, are you really sure? You mean, because I thought it was this. No, I really am certain, but I could be, but here's what I remember. And they feel each other out and they come up with a good answer. That is a good combination of communication that makes their two heads better than either one of them alone. But there are people who just proceed on. The fool displays his folly. I don't care. I'm going to go ahead with it. I don't care what you say. I know what's right, and I'm going to do it. And they're headstrong on top of it. Proverbs chapter 13. Drop down now to verse 17. A wicked messenger. A wicked messenger. Now, the Bible talks a lot about messengers. The Proverbs talks a lot about you send somebody like smoke to the eyes, and there's a person that just can't, it doesn't follow orders, it doesn't carry through your instructions, he doesn't take the message properly. A wicked messenger falls into adversity, but a faithful envoy brings healing. Faithful person. Let me read this in the New English translation. It says, an unreliable messenger falls into trouble, but a faithful envoy brings healing. Faithful. Or as Proverbs, an adjunct proverb is Proverbs 25 and verse 13, like the cold of snow in the time of harvest is a faithful messenger to those who send him. For he refreshes the soul of his masters. You know, time of harvest could be very hot in September, October, and like a cold of snow, you get that nice cold breeze, you're sweating, you're working hard in the harvest, and boy, that's very refreshing to get that cool wind. Proverbs 25, verse 13 in the New English Translation goes, like the cold of snow in the time of harvest, so is the faithful messenger to those who send him, for he refreshes the heart of his masters. That faithful messenger, that person who carries out the message and carries out the instruction. You know, we have to be faithful messengers of God's word, don't we? We have to be faithful messengers of God's truth, and we have to present that truth faithfully, properly. An unreliable messenger falls into trouble. Now, let me ask you a question. Could telling the truth ever be evil? You tell something that is true, it's a fact. Could that ever be evil? The answer is yes, of course. I say, let me tell you what so-and-so did. Let me tell you what they did 5 years ago, 2 years ago, 20 years ago. Let me tell you what they did. And I tell you all this person's foibles, sins, mistakes. And they're true. Let's say they're all true. I got them. They're all true. Could that be evil? Of course. When God sent the spies into the land, that's when they went to the house of Rahab when they first got there. And Rahab, what did she do? She told an outright lie, right? They came back and they told the truth. Some of them. Now, truth is in the eye of the beholder, too. You know, what you see, people go to the same thing and they see different things, you know. So here come the spies into this land, and they come back and they bring a report. They're telling the truth what they saw, right? What did they see? Well, some of them said, oh man, this land's got, it's a lot of desert. There's a lot of desert in this land. It's not an easy land to till. It's going to be difficult. There are not very many rivers like in Egypt. We've got the big Nile. This has got that one little stream coming down. It's not a very big river. And it's not going to be easy. You can't irrigate very far. And it's got hills and valleys, and it's dry, and you got to depend on the rain. And it's a land that is going to require lots of work. They said it like this. It's a land that devours its inhabitants. And then they said, there are people there that are huge. We go up against them. They're big. They're strong. They're mighty. They're like 9 feet tall, 10 feet. How are we going to fight them? They're the Anakim there. What are we going to do? How are we going to win? Were they telling the truth? Yeah. People were big. The land is tough land in some ways. You have to depend. God gave them that land. The land of Israel was specifically designed by God to make those people look to him. It was a land in which it depended on rain in due season. If you don't get that rain in due season, you are in trouble in that land. And the Israelites had to pray. They had to look to God. And God, when they did look to him, blessed that land. He blessed it with rain. He blessed it with these crops. But if they didn't get the rain, and you know, one of the penalties that God gave them was, you know, if you don't stay faithful to me, I'll withhold the rain. And let's see what your land does then. Land won't do very well if the rain is withheld. So it was a land that was difficult in some ways. And they use the phrase, it consumes its inhabitants. It doesn't actually consume them, but it means it's difficult to make a living. Let me read you Numbers chapter 13, verse 32. The New English Translation says, they presented the Israelites with a discouraging report of the land. that they had investigated, saying, the land we passed through to investigate is a land that devours its inhabitants. All the people we saw are of great stature. They're really big. You can tell the truth. But in this case, the truth was discouraging. And it was the truth of what you saw, but you didn't see everything. Meanwhile, Joshua and Caleb came back and they said, man, it's a great land. We saw beautiful crops. This is a land flowing with milk and honey. We could really have a great time in this land. This is beautiful land. It's beautiful. It's got mountains. It's got valleys. It's got this. It's got that. It's got fresh water there too. And it's a great land. Let's go in and take it. And the Eternal our God will give us the victory. But because of that discouraging report, which was factually true, was a tough land in many ways. Factually true, the people were large, of great stature. Factually true, but it turned and discouraged the sons of Israel. And they said, we're not going to go. And when Joshua and Caleb said, let's go, we'll stone you to death. We're not going. You know, we're not going to wait. You didn't bring us out here to kill us here. No, we're not going to go there. You know, we liked Egypt and so on. And they wouldn't move. And God says, okay, that's it. Don't go. And then once God said, don't go, what did they say? Okay, we'll go. No, God said, no, you're not going. Now you're not going. You want to go now? Too late. It's over. You're not going. I'm going to march you around in that wilderness. You were in the land. Your spies went in the land 40 days. I'm going to march you around every day for a year, 40 years in the wilderness until this generation that's rejecting my land that I wanted to give them is gone. And that's what happened. They went 40 years in the wilderness after that. So you can tell the truth, you see, and it can be evil. You can tell a lie, as Rahab did, and it can be righteous. Depends on the circumstances in which things are done. You see? Depends on the circumstances. Truth can be evil. Now, not the truth of the Bible. Did you ever read about the midwives under Moses in Moses' time? Pharaoh had given an order for the midwives to make sure all these boy babies, you know, were drowned or dead or killed. He wanted all the boy babies. You know, to let them know about the boy babies. And when he asked the midwives, well, how come there these boy babies are surviving? How come there are so many boy babies? And they said, well, the Israelite women are not like us. They're not like the Egyptian women. They are so energetic. They have those babies before we can get there, which was a lie, factually a lie. And Pharaoh said, oh, is that the reason? Okay, well, now I'm going to make a decree. Then we're going to have to kill the babies after they're, you know, they got further up the line. We see them, we're going to find them. Find boy babies, kill all the boy babies and just save the girls. And of course, you know the story of Moses. Mother put him on a little floating boat and sent him down the Nile. And she purposely did it so that one of the daughters of Pharaoh would pick him up. Again, here was a lie. They told a lie to Pharaoh, and what did the Bible say? And they found favor. God blessed them. They found favor with God. The midwives. They were Hebrew midwives, by the way. And they found very good favor with God. Because there are circumstances. You've got to use wisdom you can't be such a It's this way, black and white, in all cases. Can't be this way, all black and white. Otherwise, you're not using wisdom. You have to get wisdom. You have to get knowledge. You have to understand when and where, how to apply God's commands, how to apply these things. Here we have this proverb, verse 17. What does it say? A wicked messenger falls into adversity. But the proper, faithful messenger, faithful envoy is what? He brings healing. So here is this proverb a simile to point out enough that a faithful servant is refreshing to his master. That we saw that in Proverbs 25. Refreshing. He restores the life of his master if he delivers the things right. You have someone that works for you, that is a part of your, you know, that you depend on, and they carry it out faithfully. I'm telling you, it's a refreshing thing. And some of you right here in this audience help with the things that you do. You do it faithfully, you do it deliberately, you do it right, and it's a blessing, and it's a blessing to many, not just to us here, but blessing to many. Proverbs 13, verse 18. Poverty and shame come to those who don't care about instruction. This is from the Common English Bible. That's their interpretation of those words. Poverty and shame come to those who don't care about instruction. Honor belongs to those who heed correction. Let me read it in the New English Translation. The one who neglects discipline ends up in poverty and shame. Two things. Shame is a part of it. Poverty. Because you're going to do things, if you neglect instruction, you neglect discipline. Now, discipline isn't spanking, it isn't hitting, it isn't, whipping you with a whip. That's not discipline. Discipline is teaching you self-control. Learning to control yourself. You know, they've done experiments in kids as to which kids are going to, these are long-term experiments, which kids are going to do well in life and in school, going through school. And what they did was to have these kids to see which ones could postpone gratification. So they would put a piece of candy in front of them. Each kid got a piece of candy, and they would say, if you can wait until the next hour before you eat it, you'll get an extra piece of candy. And some kids just couldn't do it. They had to eat that candy now. And they watched which kids could postpone that pleasure, postpone that satisfaction. Could you wait until the next hour or later, and then they would give you an extra reward. They found that the kids who could postpone their pleasures, postpone their desires, and hold off until they could, they finish their work. You know, you wait till later and don't do it now. They tell them you can eat at any time. There's no penalty whatsoever, but those who will get an extra one. But there were a lot of kids, they just couldn't. They have to have it right now. Instant gratification. Instant gratification leads to lack of discipline. If you can't postpone your gratification. So poverty and shame come to those who don't care about instruction or discipline. Honor belongs to those who heed correction. Or the one who accepts reproof is honored. Somebody tells you, you didn't do it right. You didn't say this right. You didn't do this right. And you said, okay, tell me, what should I have done? What's the right thing? And they tell you, they reprove you, they correct you, you accept it. You make changes in your life based on that correction. And guess what? You're going to get honor. Honor. You will be honored. Honored comes to the person who heeds the correction. Because none of us knows, none of us is perfect. None of us can know everything and do everything right. We don't. We make mistakes. So someone needs to take us aside periodically and say, you didn't do that right. And you listen to it and you heed it and you hear it and you're better for it. Think back on the questions you missed in high school. Those probably, the answers to those now stick in your mind better than the questions that you got right on the test. You can't even remember what you got right. But you do remember the ones you missed. That's correction. That's instruction. You will be better for it. Honor and success are contrasted. Listen, in the book of Proverbs, honor and success are contrasted with poverty and shame. Discipline is the key to enjoying the one. Honor and success and escaping poverty and shame. So we have to note that it's the difference between a man, and his wealth. And the Bible talks about the one who neglects discipline ends up in poverty and shame, as opposed wealth in the Bible, when the Hebrew word implies something heavy. It's weighty. Wealth is something that's substance. It's substantive, okay, as opposed to something that's flighty. You ever hear people talk about the lightweight? If you're a lightweight versus a man of substance, you don't want to be a lightweight, right? You want to be a person of substance. And wealth is that substance in the Bible. And people are success, poverty, and shame come to those who neglect it, but success, one who he gets honor, he gets wealth, he gets blessings, and they're contrasted one with the other, poverty and shame versus honor and success. Proverbs 13, verse 19. Desire realized is sweet to the soul, but it is an abomination to fools to turn away from evil. That seems very difficult. It's a very hard verse for me to really comprehend, but I know it's true if you go around in society. A desire fulfilled, and this is the New English translation. The first one was the New American Standard. Desire realized is sweet to the soul, but it's an abomination to fools to turn away from evil. Or the New English translation, desire fulfilled is sweet to the soul, but fools abhor. They hate turning away from evil. You would say, well, what do you mean you hate it? They do. They hate it. I had a lady whose one son was in prison. He had gone three times. He was three strikes. In his third strike, he was, you know, he stole. He would commit robbery, not armed robbery, thankfully, but robbery, and it was always a felony because he stole a lot more than was would have made it a misdemeanor. So he was always in the felony range. He finally, you know, on his second strike, he gets out, and his mother says, "Why don't you go up to Morro Bay here in California? Up to Morro Bay, your brother is a landscaper. Your brother has agreed you can come and work for him. You know, he'll pay you a good wage, and you can be working for him." No, not going to do it. I don't want to do it. I don't feel like working for him, having him tell me what to do. And she said, "But this will be good for you, and your brother's there. You have to start a new life, and you can make some good money." And no. So what does he do? He breaks into a Radio Shack, breaks into the roof of a Radio Shack, cameras all over the place, photographing him. After he's done, they see who it is. I mean, he got his face in face recognition. They got him. He's dead to rights. And that's his third strike. And he's sentenced to virtually a life in prison, 35 years, because he's incorrigible. Three strikes, and he's back in prison. So again, you would think, can these people turn? A fool has abhors turning from evil. I hate it. So in Proverbs 13, verse 12, you know, we read this: hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a desire fulfilled is like a tree of life. Proverbs 29 and verse 27 is an adjunct scripture here. An unjust person is an abomination to the righteous. But listen to this last part. This is Proverbs 29, verse 27. An unjust person is an abomination to the righteous. Something we hate to see. And the one who lives an upright life is an abomination to the wicked. You would think if you lived an upright life that just about everybody would admire you. Mm-mm. There are people who despise you if you live a right life. It's an abomination to them to see you live a holy, a righteous, a good, an upright, a moral life. They hate it. The Bible says it right here, Proverbs 29, verse 27. And the one who lives an upright life is an abomination to the wicked. The wicked Don't appreciate it. Make fun of you, laugh at you, ridicule you. If you try to live righteously, you get around them, you'll see. They only want you to carouse and live the debauched life like they're doing. And they think that's fun. And for us, an unjust person is not something that we want to be around. It's an abomination to us. And that's the way it is. Now, one last proverb, verse 20. He who walks with wise men will be wise. But the companion of fools will suffer harm. You get around fools, you're going to be companion with them. And you may not be a fool yourself, but you stay around fools and you're going to get in trouble. I told you years ago about a lady that came to me. Her son was in prison. And why? Because he was friends with these guys and they called him, come down, meet us at this certain place. Bring your car, meet us at the corner of these two streets and we'll see you there. And these three guys robbed a store with a gun, ran to his car and said, step on it, step on it. He jammed on the gas and they went, but they got caught. He said, he pled, I didn't know what they were doing, honest, I didn't know. And they said, yes, he did, he knew just as much as we did. So he went to prison with them just as much, armed robbery. And she was just devastated. And I said, you know, it just illustrates who your friends are. You have the wrong kind of friends and you can get in trouble. On the other hand, he who walks, now that word walks in the Hebrew is a word that is an active participle. It stresses a continual, a durative action, something that's enduring. See? So one should stay in close association. In other words, implies that you should stay in close association with the wise. Move in the same direction that the wise do. It's an enduring word as opposed to be associated with the fools. Those who are associated with fools become fools. Or as this little ditty says, fool he ends, that fool he befriends. Right? Fool he ends, that fool befriends. So you walk with the wise. What happens when you walk with the wise? You're in close association with people who are wise. You learn wisdom. You will become wise. And all the studies of social psychology bear it out. The social psychology of groups of people who you associate with, you tend to pick up their ideas, you tend to pick up their way of doing things, you tend to pick up their values, and you get swept into it, you get forced into it. So you need to choose your friends wisely, and you need to walk with the wise. Find people who are going someplace, find people who are doing well, associate with them, be with them. Don't be foolish. Don't despise people, you know, oh, they're nerds. They're nerds. I talked to a group of people, you know, young people who had some, got in trouble with the law. They wanted me to come down to the California department there and talk to these people. And so I did. And you try talking to them about getting a good, scorn and ridicule, and you can't make, oh, this is all a bunch of, you know, these people steal too, and then, you know, and they just despise trying to go straight, get a good job, learn, work hard. They thought that was foolish. It was an abomination to them. Yes. The companion of fools will suffer harm. Walk with the wise. And when you pick up this Bible and you read these Proverbs and you read them diligently, you are walking with the wise.